Well, we're into August already, the eighth month of the year. Alec Hogg here, and welcome to the Biz News Edge. A packed show for you today. We've got another big scalp for the Madlunga Commission. Fresh polling that shows the ANC is heading for a bruising November. 500 of its councillors ain't going to be getting their jobs back after the 4th. Interpol's verdict on South Africa's cybercrime exposure. We are basically the cybercrime capital of Africa, but over 20% of it. There's a record $2.8 billion in fines from the FSCA, headed by our enemy, Bankso. And then results and updates this morning from Nedbank, Telkom, StoreAge, and a name we've just added conviction to in the Ricardo portfolio for South African stocks. And then we'll close on Wall Street and explain why another Ricardo portfolio stock, Amazon, just had one of its biggest days ever, up 15% after the release of its quarterly numbers. Let's get into it. Well, let's start with that story that should worry anyone who believes institutions ought to do their job. Our columnist, John Mattison, has tracked the Madlunga Commission, where the head of the Investigating Directorate Against Corruption, IDAC, Andrea Johnson, resigned last week. Her resignation was accepted immediately by President Ramaphosa, as we have reported on the Biz News Edge before. And this was after evidence that showed her unit had put Police Commissioner Fani Masemola in the same dock as an alleged crime kingpin on charges that Judge Madlunga said had no legal basis. Add to that, a leaked recording caught Johnson admitting that she felt like the dumbest lawyer in South Africa. Three investigators have since been suspended. Mattison's piece on Biz News has got a deeper point, though. Johnson is now the second prosecution boss in a row to flame out over Madlunga Commission cross-examination after the NPA head Shamila Batoi's own troubled run. His conclusion, echoed by the Democratic Alliance's Glenys Breytenbach, is blunt. IDAC was a band-aid on the NPA's wounds, and now South Africa genuinely needs an independent anti-corruption commission instead. New polling released this morning by The Common Sense shows the ANC is heading for a rough November. Support has slipped to 39%, down from 46% at the last local elections, as were in 2021. Even with the electoral system's built-in advantage, the ANC's spread-out support lets it win more council seats than its vote share alone would earn. The party is projected to take only about 4,000 of the roughly 9,000 municipal seats that are up for grabs, versus 4,548. So there are 550 of its councillors who ain't going to be going back into their jobs after the 4th of November. Beyond the dented pride, that guts ANC patronage networks and organisational muscle, and it helps explain the disturbing rise in councillor assassinations ahead of the polls. Interpol dropped its African cyber threat assessment this morning, and if you're a South African business owner, it's worth reading twice. We're in the eye of the storm here in our country. 92% of every ransomware attack detected on this continent last year hit South African targets. The Weather Service, SAA, telecoms, all hit. We account for roughly 40% of Africa's phishing attempts. Continent-wide, cybercrime losses more than doubled to $484 million, according to Interpol, with AI now doing the criminals' dirty work. Deepfakes, cloned voices, fraud at machine speed. Interpol's message? Laws are improving, but enforcement capacity isn't keeping pace. Guard your business. On a related topic, the FSCA just dropped its enforcement report that came out on Friday. The number is staggering. 2.8 billion rand in fines this past year, 24 times what it levied the year before. Let that sink in. 24 times more crimes. Well, almost all of it traces to a story we broke at BizNews. A company called Banxo running deep fake ads using Elon Musk and Johan Rupert's faces. It took whistleblower advocate Petra van Niekerk to come to us and tell us, as embarrassed as she was in being caught, that she'd lost her life savings and she was now determined to crack the case open. Banxo has now been fined over 2 billion rand, and all of the executives involved, they've been put onto a blacklist. They may not operate again in South Africa. Steinhoff's Stehan Grobler and Medbond added more. 678 investigations closed in the year. A record. Well done, FSCA. You're showing South Africa you have teeth. On to company news now, and Nedbank dropped a leadership change this morning, day before it releases its financial results. COO Mfundo Nkuhlu is taking early retirement at year end, closing out 22 years at the bank. Nedbank is not replacing him. In other words, the chief operating officer role itself is being scrapped and his responsibilities being passed on to the rest of the executive committee. The timing is notable. As mentioned, it comes a day before Nedbank's interim results, and the market's verdict, well, it was a shrug. The stock actually firmed slightly this morning, trading near 52-week highs, which suggests that investors are expecting some good numbers tomorrow. It's comfortably inside its recent uptrend of late. Investors clearly see this as an orderly succession, not a red flag, and they're saving their attention for tomorrow's earnings and dividend instead. We'll have all that information just as soon as it drops here on the BizNews Edge. Nedbank might be in the news as on the banking side, but on telecoms, the morning belongs to Telkom, which released its first quarter update. And that landed really well with the JSE. Group revenue grew a modest 2.5% to just over 11 billion rand. But the real story is underneath. Data revenue up nearly 9%. And it now accounts for almost 2/3 of everything that Telkom earns. And mobile subscribers climbed past 25 million. That's a huge number, isn't it? Cost discipline did the rest. CapEx fell almost a fifth, and the EBITDA, that operating profit line before depreciation and amortization, jumped 10%, with profit margins expanding sharply. The one soft spot, BCX, its IT services arm, saw revenue drop over 10% on delayed hardware deals, though cybersecurity and cloud both grew strongly there. The market loved it. Telkom shares jumped more than 5% on the news. And another stock that the market loves, StoreAge, is expanding its self-storage footprint. This is an area that has been a boom in South Africa of late. The self-storage story was inherited from the United States, where it was one of the best performing sectors of the past couple of decades. Well, the StoreAge REIT is buying 10 extra space properties for 387 million rand, plus a further 38 million that it'll be spending in planned upgrades, while it's also signing a two-year deal to manage six more extra space sites. Together, this adds nearly 52,000 square meters of lettable space across the Western Cape, Gauteng and KwaZulu-Natal. It's fully debt-funded, expected to boost earnings per share for StoreAge once it completes, and it keeps gearing within the target range. Growth without diluting existing shareholders, something that investors just love. The market gave it a modest tick higher in a sector that's drawing steady institutional interest as interest rates stabilize and the value of self-storage as an asset class becomes more apparent. Well, let's turn now to the Ricardo portfolio, and in particular, a name I want to spend some time on, the Lewis Group. At every Berkshire Hathaway AGM that I attended in Omaha, Warren Buffett kept returning to the same idea. The market will occasionally offer you a dollar for 70 cents, and your only job is to have the courage to pick it up. Lewis Group's freshly filed annual results, the annual report was out on Friday, read like exactly that kind of offer. Lewis is a member of the Ricardo South African Rand portfolio, and I noticed that we received R5.60 in dividend for each share a couple of weeks ago. That was added to our portfolio and then reinvested in the past month. Well, the furniture and appliance retailer delivered another stellar year, quite outside of the dividends, which rose 12% in the year, incidentally, and 8.97 for the year as a whole. Headline earnings jumped 18%, and revenues got through the billion rand for the first time. They were up 11%. That does not tell you about a company that is in anything other than rude health. Yet, Lewis shares are still stuck around 88 rand on a price-to-earnings multiple of just 5x. For a business that's compounding earnings in double digits, that only makes sense if the market believes something's badly wrong. Nothing in the numbers, nothing in the annual report supports that fear. Lewis's edge is its credit book. Furniture sold on terms of up to 36 months to South African that mainstream banks won't touch. And management is provisioning conservatively, not optimistically, for a weak consumer. There are two blemishes worth flagging, though. The new specialty division swung to a loss after an impairment charge, and for the first time in its listed history, Lewis now has meaningful debt. Its gearing is 40% of equity. It's worth watching, not ignoring. Of course, Lewis explains that it took on the debt to push out its debtor's book to expand and then to grow more outlets. It's that confident on its business model. And people like Piet Viljoen, who's one of the savviest investors around, tend to agree. On the back of these results, we've lifted our adjusted intrinsic value per share for Lewis from 120 to 130. So it's up by 10 rand. Blended earnings and dividend yield give us a fair value of around between 130 rand and 150 rand a share, which is above Lewis's own net asset value of 106 rand. You put those two together and you've got a margin of safety at the current share price above 30%. Hence the Buffett story of buying a rand's worth of assets for 70 cents. Well, good news from Lewis, but even better news coming in our Ricardo US dollar portfolio with the single biggest market story of the week, Amazon, one of our stocks that we hold there. Well, first, a quick lap around other markets before we get into the Amazon story, and this is courtesy of the team at Bloomberg. Oil's had a wild few hours on the back of Washington's on-again, off-again approach to Iran. Tokyo has spent a genuinely staggering sum defending the yen, and there's a mega merger brewing in pharmaceuticals that could reshape the drug industry. Here's today's big international news.
U.S. President Donald Trump has again shifted course on Iran, with new talks set to begin today. The latest reversal comes after Trump once again ratcheted up the threat of more strikes, continuing a now familiar pattern of escalation and de-escalation. The president says he stepped back from the latest attacks following appeals from Saudi Arabia and other U.S. allies in the region. Here's what he told reporters on board Air Force One.
We're talking to them in the form of a negotiation. It begins tomorrow afternoon, and we'll see if it's true. I'd love to do that, save a lot of lives, save a lot of unnecessary power, to be honest with you. It'll take many, many years to ever build it back. If it could, I don't think it would be even buildable back. So we had an attack that would be the biggest attack since World War II.
Brent crude fell by as much as 7% after President Trump suggested a deal to reopen the Strait of Hormuz may be close.
Japan's battle to support the yen is intensifying, with traders betting that authorities intervened again after last week's historic joint action with the US. The yen swung from a small decline to gains of as much as 1.4% against the dollar during morning trading in Tokyo. Japan is estimated to have spent a record 8.45 trillion yen, that's the equivalent of about $53 billion, buying yen last week. US Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent has signalled that Washington is prepared to act again if needed, raising the stakes for investors betting against the yen. And while the intervention has reversed much of the currency's recent slide, investors remain focused on whether policymakers can sustain the rally.
Pharmaceuticals giant AstraZeneca is said to have explored a mega deal to create one of the world's biggest drug makers. Bloomberg's Tiwa Adebayo has more.
AstraZeneca and Bristol Myers Squibb have reportedly held early stage discussions about combining. Bloomberg understands that it's unclear whether the conversations are ongoing or if they will result in a transaction, but any agreement would be significant. The merger could provide AstraZeneca with a bigger foothold in the US market, complementing its more than $260 billion valuation. Meanwhile, Bristol Myers Squibb is preparing for the loss of patent protection for some of its biggest products, including a blood thinner and cancer drug, which make up about half of its sales. In London, Tiwa Adebayo, Bloomberg Radio.
Looking at the markets, well, Brent crude futures are down by 5.3% this morning on this back and forth around the US and Iran negotiations today, $83.29. Treasuries rising, yields down about 4.5 basis points on the 10-year US Treasury yield at 4.69. Chip stocks this morning are down. So after that record rally on the KOSPI, you actually have the KOSPI this morning retreating some 5.4%.
Sure, that Korean market really is all over the place. But bear all of that in mind, because the number we're about to unpack is rippling through those same markets. Amazon's share price jumped 15% on Friday, and this after the release of its second quarter results. That's a $600 billion swing in market value, more than the whole South African GDP. And then another 50% on top of it in a single session, in one session. And that's after a earnings call rather than a takeover rumor. Well, here's why. Amazon Web Services grew 37% year on year. It's the fifth straight quarter of acceleration, the fastest pace in 18 quarters. That is rocket fueled. That alone would have been notable, but AWS's operating margin also expanded. So not only is it growing at hyper speed, but its profits are also expanding. The profit ratio there released in the results, 39%, up 6 points on a year ago. Growth accelerating, margins expanding at the same time is like a super crocodile opening its jaws really widely, and exactly the opposite of what the market has feared from every big AI spender this year, the hyperscalers as they call them. Add a $496 billion order backlog that's growing at triple digit rates, in other words, over 100%, and you've got real forward visibility, not just a good quarter. And then there's the CapEx. Amazon is now guiding the market that it's going to spend roughly $220 billion in spending in 2026. That's up from $200 billion 3 months ago, and that free cash flow will go negative and has done so for the first time in many years. That normally spooks the market, but it didn't here, because Andy Jassy explained during the conference call exactly what's going on, and it's worth hearing him in his own words.
For servers and networking equipment, on average, it takes a little less than 3 years to break even on that investment. The servers currently have a useful life of at least 5 to 6 years, and most of our AI capacity these days is being contracted for at least 5-year terms. That means that we're driving significant free cash flow on the servers and networking equipment in the 2 to 3 years after we break even. So for our data centers, which have 30-plus-year useful lives, we should get at least 5 to 6 generations of server economics like I explained earlier, with subsequent generations after the first having even better overall economics because we don't have to repeat that upfront data center investment. This means in the short term, when demand is necessitating so many data centers being built simultaneously in advance of when we can start monetizing them, we'll spend a lot of CapEx and encounter free cash flow headwinds until these data centers come online, can be monetized, and we get a few years into these servers being utilized. But as we get a few years out, and the revenue growth outpaces the incremental CapEx growth, which will happen at some point, the resulting revenue, free cash flow, and return on invested capital is very compelling. We've done this before in the first era of cloud computing, just over a longer time horizon, where demand built more gradually than it has in AI. But we see the margins and returns in AI tracking what we saw with Core at the same point of evolution, actually a little ahead. We now believe we will spend approximately $220 billion in cash CapEx in 2026, the higher cost of memory pushing this number up from our prior estimate of about $200 billion. But even at that amount, we will still not have enough capacity to meet all of the demand we have in 2026, and I believe this dynamic will also be true in 2027 too. In fact, the demand we already have for 2028 is striking. And remember, enterprises are still very early in using inference at scale in their current production applications. We've long believed AWS could become a few $100 billion revenue business, and now believe it'll be at least double that, and very possibly be a $1 trillion annual revenue business for us in time, with very appealing accompanying free cash flow and return on invested capital.
And that's what the market loved. Listening to Andy Jassy, been there, done that. They were the leaders in cloud computing. In other words, moving ahead of everyone else. If I recall, it was something like 4 to 5 years advantage that Amazon Web Services has in cloud. And he knows what it takes. If you can imagine, just in a nutshell, what he's saying here, we invest now because we have huge demand for the services, and we know that we get a payback of 2 to 3 years, and then the same CapEx is going to be generating free cash flow for the next 3 to 4 years afterwards. Wow, that's a good business. Share price up 15%. Well, that's the BizNews Edge for today. As always, you'll find the full detail on every one of these stories and more of our coverage on biznews.com. Thanks for being with us. I'll see you tomorrow.